This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hi, this is Mary Grady with AvWeb, and today we're talking with Jeff Wise, and he's a science writer, and he recently completed a book called Extreme Fear, The Science of Your Mind in Danger. And a lot of the examples he uses in there are about flying, because Jeff himself is a pilot, and he's going to talk to us about some of the things he discovered in the process of writing this book and how people who fly can maybe apply some of the lessons that he learned. So, Jeff, thanks for being here today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
So why don't we start telling us about some of the discoveries you made kind of personally. You kind of made yourself a test subject in part of this book.
That's right. You know, I became really interested in the subject of how the brain generates the fear response. As I went about my career as a journalist, I did a lot of stories about adventure travel, and I flew in small planes, but I also did things like, you know, whitewater rafting and bungee jumping. And when I was in these situations that felt very scary, I would find this kind of force seemed to overtake me. And even though I could say to myself, well, rationally, there's no reason for me to be afraid, this plane is perfectly safe, or this bungee jump is statistically unlikely to kill me, I would still find myself, sweating, my stomach churning, trembling even, and there was nothing I could do to prevent it. And particularly when I started flight training, I found these things happening. And I remember vividly on the first flight I went on, that sort of $75 orientation flight that I did, when I was wondering, geez, is this right for me? And I remember vividly thinking, my God, if I was alone up in this plane by myself, and I knew that only I could get myself back on the ground safely, that thought alone would be enough to make me panic, and I wouldn't be able to land the plane. And so I originally thought, I don't think I'll be able to take up flying because I just think I'll be too anxious. And of course, I think probably a lot of your listeners would have this experience too, that I'd oftentimes be nervous before my flight training, but that afterwards I would just be sort of exhilarated and sign up for my next flight lesson, right away. And so it's this interesting dance between fear and anxiety and exhilaration that I think every pilot is probably familiar with.
Oh, definitely. And I think in your study, you kind of found what's going on both subconsciously on a subconscious level and how you can help to control that by understanding it and using your conscious mind.
When we're very afraid, we have two problems. One is the thing that seems to be a threat. And the other thing is our response to that threat. Many times, and I think a lot of pilots who are listening to this will relate. Sometimes the most dangerous thing that's going on in the cockpit is our own fear. It can prevent us from flying the plane. There's an aspect of fear called cognitive tunneling, where you become so fixated on whatever seems to be important and you're no longer looking out the window. You might not be looking at the right gauges. You're not looking for traffic. You're not thinking about the big picture. You can get obsessed on one thing, and all of a sudden, you might be at an unusual attitude or flying into weather or whatever. So basically, the point of the book is to say, look, this is how the fear response works. This is why you feel the way that you do in a crisis, and here's how you can prepare yourself so that when the next crisis strikes, you'll have some tools to deal with it a little better.
And what are some of those tools? You kind of go over some of the ways that people have discovered to try to relieve those situations by preparing ahead of time.
There's quite a few. One of the most basic ones is called habituation, and this is a very building blocks kind of way that our brains work. We get used to things that we're familiar with. They stop having much of an effect on us, and this is true across psychological dimensions. But when it comes to fear, basically, if you're afraid of something and you allow yourself to approach it, not to the extent that you become overwhelmed with fear, but that just that sort of the fear elevates your heart rate, maybe makes you feel a little tingly, but doesn't become terrifying, you'll find that gradually that response gets less and less each time you do it, and you're able to approach closer and closer. And I think what happened with me with my flight training was a perfect example. Being up in a small plane at first itself was terrifying. Then being up alone in a plane, but in the pattern, it seems scary. And then gradually, you know, I could alone on a cross country. And so gradually you become, situations that had been absolutely terrifying become familiar and become less scary. And, you know, one of the other things that we can do to minimize fear is just to take power, to take control, to take action. It's much more stressful, much more unpleasant to be in a situation in which we can't do anything. And I think a lot of people are terrified of flying in a commercial sense, who are strapped into their seat back in row 14A, and you're just a spam in a can. And so you hit turbulence, you don't know what the turbulence is, you don't have a sense of the big picture, you're passive, and that can be very terrifying, whereas you're in much worse turbulence, but you're at the controls of a small aircraft. It's somehow less unpleasant and less scary.
Yeah, that's true, I think. And I also liked in the book how you you differentiated between the sort of social and physical types of fear.
I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I've been on like a long cross country. I'm in my Cessna. You know, I'm flying along at 7,500 feet, and I've looked at my charts. I've checked my gauges. Like, everything is kind of going smoothly, and I start to think, wow, I'm just up here by myself. There's no one else, you know, there's nothing below me but air. I'm the only one who can get me safely on the ground. And I sometimes sort of feel this kind of spiral of, like, anxiety. And then I start to feel the symptoms of anxiety, and that makes me feel more anxious. And I start to realize, wow, this could all spiral out of control. And I can sort of feel this incipient panic coming over me. And that's when I start to think about the lessons from the book, things like taking control, taking action, talking to someone. I find that even changing altitude can help just distract me from that self-reinforcing negative feedback loop and get my brain onto something else. Okay, let's change the power setting. Let's change the trim. Let's get on the radio to flight following and say, look, I'm changing my altitude. And just doing these things, reminding yourself that you're in control, can do a lot to just kind of ease anxiety.
Oh, definitely. And also just practice, right? I mean, the more that you've practiced, the more confident you'll be that you can handle whatever comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. That's maybe number one lesson. So the more proficient you are, the more confident you are in your skills, the less scary a crisis becomes, because you know that you have the tools. Not only do you know that you have the tools, but having the tools, having the skills so practiced that you can perform them really without thought, you are able to perform these functions without needing the frontal cortex, this sort of more cognitively advanced portion of your brain that really gets shut down in a crisis. And I'm sure many pilots have had this experience. You know, there's no way to train yourself to be fearless, to not feel fear when you know that your life is on the line. Sullenberger had, you know, over 10,000 hours of flight time. He was an expert in aviation safety. But even he said, you know, he'd never been as scared as he in his life as he was at that moment. But what he did do was he knew how to deal with the fact that your brain has been taken over. Your brain is essentially hijacked by fear, and there's nothing you can do to prevent that from happening. But what you can do is to take that into account beforehand, so that you do have the basic skills to function in your reduced mental state.
Okay, and you give some pretty dramatic examples in the book of people who face their fears. There's a woman who's attacked by a mountain lion, and and also some examples from aviation where Neil Williams, where the wing of his airplane ripped off. So
yeah. I mean, it was really the Neil Williams story that really got me thinking about this mystery of performance under pressure. Because as I've said sort of several times already, we lose the ability to think creatively and to think in complex terms when we're in a life or death situation. So therefore, how did Neil Williams come up with an incredibly clever solution to his potentially fatal situation? To recap really quickly, in 1970, he was practicing for the World Aerobatic Championships. It was a summer day in England. He was flying. He had done his routine a few times, and he was doing it for the third time. He came down from a loop, and he was pulling out from a vertical dive, and he was doing about 4 G's, and it was about level, about 300 feet AGL, when his left wing started to fold up. And he knew that, and he started to lose control of the airplane. He was trying to command a roll to the left, and the plane was rolling to the right. And pretty soon he was in a steep dive towards the ground. He had a matter of seconds before he was going to impact the ground and be surely killed. And he remembered, he later wrote that he remembered a situation in which an Eastern European pilot had started to suffer a similar kind of wing failure and had wound up upside down, and that being upside down had put the wing spar back into position. And so in less time than it takes to form a complete thought, he had reversed the control inputs, put the plane upside down, pushed the nose up to pull negative G's, and sure enough, the wing snapped back into place. Now, he's upside down. He's practically in the trees. His situation is still not very good, but at least he's still alive, and he's got a few more seconds to think about what to do next. Within less than a minute, his engine started to sputter. And so he started to lose his engine. And so then there was another life or death crisis they had to deal with. And he actually went through a series of life or death crises before he managed to get the plane safely on the ground. And I tell the whole story in the book. So the question was, how did he do it? How did he think creatively when he was in such a terrifying position? And like Sullenberger, he'd never been as scared in his life. His knees were shaking and he was trembling. And yet, he managed to come up with this incredibly creative solution. And the whole book is framed by that question. And in the course of the book, I try to come up with what I think is a pretty convincing answer.
Well, thanks, Jeff. I think it was a fascinating book. And I think anyone who flies and has ever faced fear in any way, shape, or form, which is pretty much everyone on Earth, will find something to take away from this book. And so can you just tell us, where can people find a copy of the book, and again, give us the address of your blog?
There's a link right on my blog, which is jeffwise.wordpress.com, jeffwise.wordpress.com. They can also go to Amazon and just look for Extreme Fear, The Science of Your Mind in Danger.
Okay, well, thanks very much for your time today, Jeff. We appreciate it.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine. For more on aviation safety, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com.